if you think about the S&P 500 and the S&P is up 20% for the year, like last year or more, what was it? 26.
Yeah.
26% last year. Do you think all 500 companies were up? No.
Yeah.
No, you're going to have some losses in there.
Right.
Right. So in the ETF structure, you would have made 26%. In a direct indexing structure, you wouldn't have owned all 500 companies though, right? You would own a representation of the index. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah, that's correct.
Welcome to a Wiser Retirement Podcast, where we believe the best financial advice should always be conflict-free. I'm your host, Casey Smith. Today, I'm joined by Andrew Pratt, the king of data, to talk about direct indexing benefits for high net worth individuals. Hey, Andrew.
Good morning, Casey.
So this is exciting. This is something we've been talking about for really a couple of years. Direct indexing, I think, is definitely the way of the future. In the meantime, though, let's take a step back in time. Let's go back to, 2004, 2009, 10. These things called ETFs, exchange traded funds, were all the hot topic, right?
Right.
All the rage. Yep. Mutual funds ever since, I believe, 2003, 2004 have been losing value, not in price, but just in losing assets is what I should say. And there's a good reason. The ETF structure was much more efficient to own inside brokerage accounts than mutual funds.
Right. Yeah. It's, generally lower fees. And I think we had a podcast on this, but lower fees, and it's much more tax efficient than a mutual fund wrapper.
So you think about all the trading that mutual fund managers do in their portfolio, and all those trades generate capital gains, hopefully, right?
Right.
So those gains get passed through. Now, you can even have capital gains in years where the mutual fund lost value, which becomes very tax inefficient. And you didn't have transparency. There's lots of reasons as to why the mutual fund model has been dying. Then come these ETFs where you don't have these negative tax consequences. Now, there are rare situations where you do get capital gains, especially in the lesser managed ones, but the larger ones, your Vanguard, BlackRock's. Now, sometimes there's so many gains you can't help but have capital gains. That does happen. But the point is that the ETF structure was more efficient. And the first generation of ETFs were really just passive vehicles. Like you could buy the S&P 500 through an ETF. You could buy the Russell 1000, Russell 2000, 3000, small cap S&P 600 or 400 for small mid cap space. And then international, you could buy the MSCI indexes, right? You could do all these passive things. Now, in the world of ETFs, I think there's more active ETFs than there are passive ETFs. So the mutual fund active management structure moved to the ETF format. So really, they should be called exchange-traded products, and then we should probably talk about what they do, but that's not what we did here in the U.S. So it's very confusing for people trying to learn, but ETF is just a structure, and then inside that structure, you could be passive or you could be active, right?
Right, and I'd say active ETFs have become more prominent over recent years, but I'd say, in today's world, it is more dominated by a passive exposure, tracking a benchmark or sector, whether it's a U.S. sector or international sector, but or asset class. But yeah, there are active ETFs out there that have like a slight management overlay, and it's still in that efficient tax format, and it's also generally a lower cost to buy.
So then, inside our brokerage accounts, we can now run multiple models that allow us to move from one model to the other model with the same underlying holdings, meaning that the S&P 500 by Vanguard is the same 500 stocks and the S&P 500 by State Street or BlackRock or insert company name, right?
Right.
So what's really cool about that is when you have a year like 2022, where you have a significant loss in the S&P 500, if you have a loss in the number of capital gains in your portfolio, meaning the price you paid on December 31st, 21 is now much lower. In July of 22, you can sell the S&P 500 and buy a like ETF that has basically the same underlying holdings, and you can create a tax loss.
Right.
Now, the most you can deduct in 1 year is $3,000, but it carries forward. So if you generated $600,000 in losses, it's paper losses because the portfolio is no longer not invested. It's just reinvested in something very similar. So the benefit, right? The benefit is you can create these tax losses to carry forward. So for example, we have one family, we generated probably $500,000 in losses. They have recovered all those losses just as if they had never sold it in their portfolio from 22. And they're selling a commercial building in the future. So when they sell that commercial building for, let's say it's $1 million capital gain, we now have that $500,000 credit sitting there waiting for them. So they don't have to pay as much in capital gains tax. So for more affluent investors, the ETF structure enabled that to happen. Right. Now, let's take it one step further. That was the past. Let's take it one step further and enter direct indexing. Now, direct indexing and custom indexing, I think they get kind of used interchangeably.
Personalized indexing, custom indexing, but yeah.
And then a lot of the origins was to build your own index that could exclude certain companies.
Right.
Was the idea.
Yeah. I think originally it was built more around customization. And, you know, while there are, sponsors or firms offering that aspect of it, it generally is used to track a broad market indices like the S&P 500 or Russell 1000.
So why would we give up ETFs for direct indexing?
Good question. So as you mentioned, there are ETFs are very tax efficient and you can do tax loss harvesting and, you know, lower your tax liability over time. However, with direct indexing, you are directly owning the underlying securities of the index. So for instance, the S&P 500, you could own 500 individual stocks in your account. And, you know, in any given year, there could be a good amount of stocks that are at a loss and you could individually tax loss harvest those stocks. And actually, if you're watching on video, if you look at the chart that we have, you can see, from 2012 through 2022, this is the Russell 1000, but it ranges from, 120 stocks that were at a loss that had negative returns to even last year in 2022, there were 800 stocks. So direct indexing allows you to directly own these stocks and to individually sell these stocks if they were at a loss.
So, to a layperson, if you went out and you picked 40 securities to buy and you have a loss in a couple, most people go, oh, I don't want to sell that. I've lost money and you wait for it to rebound.
Right.
But if you back up a step, if you go to a little higher level, if you think about the S&P 500 and the S&P is up 20% for the year, like last year or more, what was it? 26% last year. Do you think all 500 companies were up? No.
Yeah.
No, you're going to have some losses in there.
Right.
Right. So in the ETF structure, you would have made 26%. In a direct indexing structure, you wouldn't have owned all 500 companies though, right? You would own a representation of the index. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah, that's correct. I mean, if you're tracking the S&P 500, it might be like 300-ish, but if you're tracking the Russell 1000, it could be like 500. So again, it's just more opportunities with the quantity of stocks, more opportunities to realize those losses.
So you buy a representation of the index.
Correct.
And the software that's used to do this, even though you don't own all the companies, it has a pretty low tracking error. Is that correct?
That's correct. And the software, it's a systematic process that optimizes the portfolio rebalancing to this index. And, depending on whether, you're coming in, so say if you come in with fresh cash, it's, optimized immediately and it has a very tight tracking error to that index. But if you're coming in with just say, low basis stocks, just say you're an executive at Home Depot or someone that has a lot of Home Depot stock, you're probably going to have a big unrealized gain in that. So the tracking error might be a little bit wider starting out, but over time, this software will systematically, you know, get you closer to that tracking error, to a smaller tracking error.
But if you walked in with cash, you're going to have a very low tracking
error. Right. I mean, you'd be invested immediately all model.
So if you think about all the cola stocks, so I just make up one, like RC Cola, Coca-Cola, Pepsi Cola, right. What's for some other cola stocks? I should know this. Dr. Pepper. So, you know, all these cola stocks, but maybe instead of buying them all, you buy a representation of the group.
Right.
And typically they all kind of run together. Right.
Right.
So the idea here is if some of these lost money, then you would sell the one that lost money, create that credit, but then buy something else in the same group so that your representation of the index stays pure.
Right. And I think that's important. Point to note is just say, for example, the Russell 1000, which is again very similar to the S&P 500, it's US large cap. You know, the weightings might not be exact, but the software is looking at not just, you know, the tracking error and absolute weighting, like say, whatever Microsoft's 7% or 5% of the index, it's looking at different correlations and risk measures, and it's, you know, based on the characteristics of that index, it can underweight or overweight certain securities just to get into that line of the risk and return metrics of that index.
So basically you're able to track the index now, but you're also able to generate these tax credits along the way. That's the whole idea.
Yep.
So tax efficiency, that would be, I'd say, the number one benefit.
The primary benefit.
Okay. So let's move into the next benefit, reduce concentrated stock risk. So we get clients quite often that come to us with low basis stock. They might have 5, 10, in some cases, one case, like 116 holdings, but they've held them for a really long time.
Right.
So if you have all these individual stocks at low basis, you can't really get rid of it. You could keep holding those and try to buy some ETFs to fill in the gaps. That's what we used to do. But now with direct indexing, what can we do?
So with direct indexing, you know, again, it would probably take additional cash to be able to, for the software and the strategy to work, but you can transfer or you can journal over these shares. And, you know, we work our strategy provider that we work with, you know, we do analysis to see how many shares of these legacy holdings they can journal over. For the tracking error to be close enough to where it would work, but you can journal over these shares and then add this fresh cash, and then over time it would you know, with the tax loss harvesting, you could use these losses to either you know, have the losses for carry forward and to offset gains in the portfolio elsewhere, or you could help diversify your portfolio holdings. And you know, you might have this legacy account that has all these concentrated stock positions, and it's very, you know, it's not diversified. There's a lot of unsystematic risk there because of the individual company risk. So you could use the losses to help, you know, build out your allocation in a more diversified way.
So basically, if I was a Home Depot executive and I retired there and I had, you know, $1.5 million of Home Depot stock and a $2 million portfolio, then we can't, you know, we don't want to buy any more Home Depot.
Right.
So if you try to diversify by buying an ETF, you're probably going to have Home Depot in it.
Right.
So you're just buying more Home Depot inside the ETF. So with direct indexing, we can take Home Depot. We can say, well, we can't move it all into the separate managed account that does the tax loss harvesting because it'd just be all Home Depot and a few of these other stocks. But maybe they can take what, you know, We can sell off a portion.
Right.
We're going to pay some capital gains that generate some cash. And then maybe we can take 25% of Home Depot and move it into the index. And then as we work through, you know, because 25% of Home Depot is not, it's not 25%. It's not 25% of the S&P 500. It's probably less than 1%. So, you know, but you're substituting it. You're not buying any more, right?
Right.
And over time, you can use that tax loss harvesting to work off those shares of Home Depot, which would take quite a while.
It would take a while. And that actually leads to the next benefit is, I guess, select customization, which, you know, we would recommend that this is only for a few select clients, but for the company executives that have these concentrated stock positions, you can actually, you know, tell the strategy software to exclude Home Depot from purchasing that stock going forward because you have a lot of Home Depot stock elsewhere.
Right.
Are you curious why annuities keep coming up as a potential investment option? People are often told that annuities can effectively mitigate investment risks and help secure their financial future. However, annuities often benefit the salesperson and might not be the best choice for you as a consumer. To learn more about the various types of annuities, the negatives of owning them, and better investment alternatives, we have a free ebook on our website just for you. To download our ebook, Buyer Beware, Why Do They Keep Trying to Sell You That Annuity? Simply click the link in the episode notes or visit wiserinvestor.com/guides. Now let's get back to the episode.
So we can reduce concentrated stock risk to be able to diversify a portfolio more going forward. Now, you know, sometimes, you know, people have, we've had Microsoft, large holdings in Microsoft before, and that's been a great investment. But it's still, when you think about legacy planning and, you know, if you're, especially if you're younger and you retire, you want to kind of offload some of that.
Right.
You could do some of that through gifting. There's so many strategies to deal with concentrated stock. You go ahead and gift it to the next generation. You could, you can take the dividends and making sure that you're not buying more of the company. You're not in a dividend reinvestment plan. But this to me, direct indexing makes the most sense of keeping control and then trying to use those credits going forward to reduce the holding. Customizable. So direct indexing, we kind of hit on this already though, but if you wanted to create an index that basically didn't hold, it's most popular, unfortunately, with like the ESG agenda.
If you want to
eliminate, non-highly rated ESG companies from your portfolio, this is how you could do that. Typically, I think people are trying to exclude things. Think about customization. You know, why couldn't you do something that instead of excluding, you would
overweight.
Yeah, overweight, right? Like
overweight technology.
I want to overweight technology, or I want to, you know, overweight consumer staples or something like that, right?
That is a good question. From what I've seen, it's mostly exclusionary parameters. I guess you technically could, depending on the provider's offering, you could probably overweight as long as it's within that track and error range to where it'd be an acceptable range to track that index.
Yeah. Okay. So when you think about how you execute all this in an ETF, you buy it and, you know, we look at it once a week and make sure everything's performing the way it's supposed to versus our benchmark. How is customization of an index different? I mean, to me, you'd have to be monitoring it almost by the hour, looking for tax loss opportunities.
Right. And that's one thing, you know, I'd say is another kind of side benefit is, you know, this strategy is professionally managed. You know, they have a full team. For one, it's driven, the recommendations and the portfolio rebalancing is driven by the software technology. But then there's a team of portfolio managers that are analyzing this on a daily basis. And, you know, whether they're receiving alerts, you know, the market's down, you know, X percent. And then, you know, per account, they probably have, tax loss harvesting alerts set up to where they can say, okay, we receive an alert here from the software, let's go in and trade it. And then they can also, you know, monitor like wash sales and make sure that they're trading appropriately.
So obviously it takes some active management, not so much by our firm, but the provider that we're using to do this. So then that begs me to the next question. What's the cost? What's it going to cost me to do this?
Yeah, that is one of the, shortcoming or, downside. It is a little bit higher costs. You know, these providers charge a management fee. You know, I'd say most fees range from 20 basis points or 0.2% to 1%. I will note that the provider we are using, their fee is much lower than that lower end, that 20 bit management fee.
What are we at now?
I think 0.12.
0.12. So, yeah, all right. 0.12%. So Wiser can do it for 0.12 versus a 1% fee. That's big difference.
Yes, very big difference.
So 0.12. So to put that in perspective, the average cost of our ETF portfolios are around 0.08%. So it's really not that much higher than the average.
Right.
With a huge mm-hmm. tax benefit.
And again, I think, you know, that it's worth it, this 0.12%, given the fact that the team is looking at your account on a daily basis throughout the day. And it, you know, again, it's just very institutionalized management process.
Who's the ideal client for this? Obviously, people with concentrated stocks, but if you have cash and you want to do this strategy versus the ETF models, what would you say is needed?
Yeah, I would say, you know, we say high net worth client, but I'd say generally having, you know, investable assets greater than, you know, I'd say $750,000, but enough investable assets to meet that investment minimum in the strategy. The investment minimum that our strategy has is $100,000, which is lower compared to the industry standard, which is $250,000. So
if you're large cap, we're only doing this in large cap space right now. So if your large cap allocation was at least $100,000,
yes,
we could technically make this work.
Correct. And then I would also add in taxable accounts.
That was my next point. Yeah. If you have an IRA, there's no reason to be doing this.
Right.
Because you can't generate any tax credits there. So
right.
this is going to be for brokerage accounts only, the accounts that basically are not IRA or Roth qualified. So ideally, you know, just do the math. I mean, let's say it's 200,000 in this strategy. So 200,000 and a large cap exposure is at least what, 35%
in
the most conservative
model.
Yeah. Models. So 570,000. So yeah, probably that $750,000 range is a good place to start inside a brokerage account. Now, if you have an ETF already that has significant gains,
right?
Unfortunately, that's the first question I had when we started getting into this process. It's like, well, why can't you just unwrap the ETF? And they all said, yeah, we love to be able to do that.
Great idea.
Technically, you should be able to. If you had enough shares, they would take 25,000 shares. So you'd have millions of dollars at that point wrapped up in the S&P. But so you can't, you know, to get to the strategy out of the ETF world, you'd have to liquidate the ETF and go to the strategy with cash. You can't give them an ETF and say, hey, work this into your,
right,
work this into your strategy.
For instance, just say you own like the SP 500 ETF or something that tracks that, they can... some providers can like use that as kind of like a core holding, not all of them though, but yeah. So, yeah. Most of the time they can't work that into the strategy.
All right. So we got to be fair and balanced when we talk about all these new things. So what are some of the shortcomings you feel like of direct indexing?
Yeah. Already touched on higher costs. There's that asset management fee, you know, for the third party separate account manager. There's higher investment minimums. Again, generally it's $250,000 is an industry standard. And I would say that's pretty standard for any kind of, you know, I don't want to say private alternative necessarily, but any kind of separate account that's managed and not like the traditional investment format, buying stocks, ETFs, bonds, et cetera. And then, you know, so obviously with that, there's a larger capital outlay for your investment. And that's why we would say that this is more suitable for those higher net worth investors that have more liquidity and more assets, that they're, you know, more investable assets. Then I'd say the other shortcoming is just being comfortable with owning a separately managed account. Some delays, you know, with the implementation, as far as timing, you know, it's not like just, you know, journaling your assets over and we can immediately invest it. You know, there's work that takes,
there's a lot of work in the background that goes in before your strategy can start moving.
Right.
It could take a couple of weeks.
Yeah. It could take a couple of weeks. You know, we're working on, increasing those efficiencies there. But you know, there's back and forth between, you know, myself and Casey and Missy on the advisor side, just to make sure that we're all on the same page from an implementation standpoint. But then we have to relay that to our, you know, to the manager, and then work with the manager just to get everything over. And then you have to, you know, whether it's selling on our end to get the account ready, and then journaling, whether it's shares or journaling cash over. And then once the account's already under their management, then they can start trading. So there is a little bit of a lag, but again, we think the benefits outweigh the costs there.
So we kind of already touched on the ideal client for this. It's definitely a higher net worth. I'd say, you know, around $750,000 in investable assets inside a brokerage account, you know, not inside retirement. A taxable, you know, people looking for some type of tax benefit going forward. And then, yeah, you say comfortable holding SMAs. I mean, really, it's really not that much different than holding any other fund, other than you get to control kind of what's happening inside the SMA, where you don't really do that inside an ETF, I guess.
Yeah, and I guess it's more about that timing, because, you know, obviously, if you want to redeem, by all means, it's your money, you're able to do that, but it might just take a little bit longer to get those redemption assets. And again, the manager's investing toward the strategy. So, you know, ideally you let the cash sit and let the manager and the technology go through its process. But, you know, obviously things pop up and, you know, investors need liquidity. So we understand that.
So we took a while to research this direct indexing. There's lots of providers now. Even Vanguard offers this. Our right. own Ryan, our own portfolio software offered this, which would be super close to home, right? So we're literally staring at it every single day. What was your process in doing due diligence on? And ultimately, we decided to go with Charles Schwab on this.
Yeah, I think really operational efficiency was one of the main things that I wanted to consider. You know, my previous firm that I worked at, I wasn't managing our direct indexing process, but I was a backup, and I saw how it worked and had a lot of insight into the optimization, which was through Orion. So I know how much of a burden, or not burden, but like a bear that was to take on to manage it in-house yourself. So I wanted to make sure operational, you know, ease of operational efficiency was kind of at the forefront, but also too, just looking at the different investment minimums and offerings and the fees, those were very important to me as well. And just really the firm that we chose, but you know, by far had the best investment minimum and fee by far.
Yeah. And when I was at the Schwab conference, not this last year, but the year prior, they were talking heavily about their direct indexing capabilities. And they said, ultimately they want to drive the cost of direct indexing to be below the average ETF,
right?
Index ETF. Well, the average index ETF is like 3 basis points now, or 0.03.
Right.
So the fact they're already the cheapest by such a large margin is very Schwab-like, but
yeah,
knowing that, hey, this price is probably going to keep driving down, and we're working with a provider who's trying to change really investing from that standpoint. On the cost front. So I think that was a good choice, obviously. This is not going to be for everyone. And I will say that for those of you that are building assets outside of retirement, we do have a flight path program. It does not do direct indexing, but it does do tax loss harvesting automatically. And inside that flight path program, now we do this internally, so all clients get tax loss harvesting here.
Right.
But for those that are trying to build accounts and think, hey, this is a really cool strategy, I'd like to be more tax efficient in my investing, it already exists in the ETF world. It just doesn't do it via direct indexing, but we have 3 models. Then we're constantly able to move from model to model to harvest losses to create tax credits. So it's already a part of our everyday process. This just takes it to a whole different level for those with enough assets to be able to make it worthwhile.
Right. And again, you know, like 2023, the S&P 500 was up 26.5%, whatever it was. you couldn't tax loss harvest our S&P 500 ETF, but with direct indexing, you know, how many of our stocks were down that year? I think, you know, I can't remember the exact number.
It was all of them, but seven.
Yeah, exactly. It might've been, outside the AI seven, you know, it could have been 480, whatever. Well, I'm just throwing a number out there, but you could have, you know, realized some losses from with direct indexing. So you could have had some tax benefits there.
Absolutely. Well, King of Data, thank you for coming back on and talking about all this. We do have a couple of episodes where we touch on this a little bit. Tax planning strategies for high net worth individuals, episode 152. Episode 175, passing down generational wealth. We have a YouTube channel also called A Wiser Retirement. How to hire a high net worth financial advisor is a good one. I think I did that one a while back ago. We have a blog, which we have referenced. Everything we've talked about really today is direct indexing your right strategy for you. That's a new blog out on our website. We also link to it here in the show notes. Anyway, thanks for listening today. If you're interested in learning more about Wiser Wealth Management or want to schedule a consultation, meet with one of our fiduciary financial advisors, you can do so by going to wiserinvestor.com. Or click on the link in the show notes. Have a great day. Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, AC.
Thanks for listening to A Wiser Retirement Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Make sure to subscribe wherever you're listening. That way you don't miss any new episodes. We'd also appreciate if you could leave a rating and review. If you have any questions about anything that was discussed today, head to wiserinvestor.com and reach out.
This episode was produced by Edward Resendez.
This podcast is strictly for informational purposes only and is not to be considered as investment advice or a solicitation to buy or sell any financial products, securities, digital assets, or any other investment vehicles, or a basis to make any financial decisions. Wiser Wealth Management Incorporated is a registered investment advisor with the SEC. The host and or guest may personally own securities, digital assets, or other investment vehicles mentioned on this podcast. Neither the host nor guest of the show are compensated for their participation, and no referral fees are paid to or received by any host or guest for clients, listeners, or similar interests. Investments involve risk, and unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor, tax professional, insurance professional, and or legal professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Past performance is not indicative of future performance.